The headlines: people in London rally to voice support for Palestinians one day before the anniversary of Nakba Day or the Palestinian catastrophe. The Russian President Vladimir Putin says it will be a mistake for Finland to abandon its neutral status by joining the U.S.-led NATO military alliance. Plus, a member of Northern Ireland's Sinn Féin says the country is walking an irreversible journey towards reunification with the Republic of Ireland and independence from Britain. This is News. Thanks for joining us. People have taken to the streets in London in solidarity with Palestinians. The pro-Palestine rally in central London comes one day before the 74th anniversary of the creation of the Israeli regime in 1948, called Nakba Day. The demonstrators chanted slogans decrying Israeli crimes and calling for an end to the regime's oppression against Palestinians. They also condemned the recent killing of Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, demanding that perpetrators be brought to justice. The UN Security Council has condemned the killing of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. The 15-member UN body issued a unanimous condemnation on Friday. The Security Council called for an immediate, thorough, transparent, and impartial investigation into Abu Akleh's killing. She was a journalist at the Arabic language channel of the Qatar-based Al Jazeera TV network. Abu Akleh, 51 years old, was fatally shot while covering an Israeli army raid in the city of Jenin on Wednesday. She was wearing a press vest and standing with other journalists when targeted. The killing sparked an international outcry, with calls growing for Israel to be held accountable for the murder of the veteran reporter.
On Wednesday, two journalists covering an Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Jenin for Qatari broadcaster Al Jazeera came under attack. Ali Al-Samoudi was shot in the back but survived. His colleague, Shireen Abu Akleh, however, wasn't as lucky. The reporter was shot in the head and was pronounced dead after being rushed to the hospital. The attack came despite them both wearing vests with the word press emblazoned on them.
It wants the image of absolute lawlessness and operating with impunity. What could be more criminal than the targeted assassination? And just to say how strongly the whole world feels and the outrage at the assassination of Shireen Abu Akleh.
Also, according to eyewitnesses, the attack was unprovoked as there was no confrontation between Palestinians and the regime's forces at the time of the assault on the journalists.
The occupation is murderous and criminal. They shot us for no reason. We, a group of journalists, were there wearing our full press uniform in addition to the helmets with the word press written in large letters, as big as the whole world. We were obvious. We made sure to walk right in front of the army patrols so that they can see us, and they saw us after we went to a road where there were no armed people, no civilians, and there were no shooting and no incidents there. We were shocked by the shooting. I was lucky and I turned my back when the first bullet was shot and injured my back. They wanted to kill me. I was injured in my back and the second bullet shot my colleague Shireen and caused her death.
But the regime didn't spare Abu Akleh, even at her funeral. Israeli troops attacked mourners carrying the slain journalist's casket outside the hospital, causing the coffin to almost fall to the ground. She was later laid to rest in a cemetery in occupied East Al-Quds.
The United Nations and the European Union, along with several countries across the world, have denounced Abu Akleh's killing. The International Federation of Journalists and the Palestinian Authority have both vowed to submit the slain journalist's case to the International Criminal Court. But will mere denunciation deter Israel from continuing its crimes against Palestinians?
The journalist's killing and the subsequent attack during her funeral were met with international condemnation, with Israel's closest ally, the United States, calling it, quote, deeply concerning. The United Nations human rights experts have called the incident a serious attack on the freedom of media and expression and called for a transparent investigation. The case of the journalist set to be brought to the International Criminal Court, a tribunal that has in the past attempted to probe Israel's rights violations and war crimes against Palestinians, but failed to do so due to political pressure and sanctions from the United States. Israel's aggression against countries like Syria and Lebanon has also been protested in the international arena, but so far, the reactions from the international community have been limited to verbal support. That begs the question, will Tel Aviv face any accountability for its crimes?
Within international courts, because who controls international courts? And who controls the International Criminal Court while they're not even a signer to it? That's U.S. imperialism. So I don't think Israel will be brought to any kind of justice or accountability through this. But I think it's up to the people of the world, it's up to all honest reporters, journalists, and news services to make sure that this does not go unmarked.
Some observers also ascribe the intensified Israeli pressure on Palestinians to some Arab states' moves to normalize ties with the regime. The Arab states had claimed that their decisions would help the Palestinian cause, an excuse that has repeatedly proven to be nothing more than mere window dressing over the past 2 years. Many Palestinians believe that in the absence of any international accountability, resistance remains their only way forward.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. The Finnish Prime Minister Sanna Marin says the war in Ukraine and Russia's threat make it necessary for Helsinki to join NATO.
Well, we are in the situation in Europe where Russia acts very aggressive to its neighbors. We are having war in Ukraine, so I think we are already there. And now we have to make sure that something that is happening in Ukraine right now won't ever again happen in Finland.
The remarks came after Finnish President Sauli Niinistö held talks with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin over his country's bid to join the military alliance. Putin said that there is no threat to Finland's security, so should not abandon its neutrality policy. The Russian president believes joining NATO will have a negative impact on Moscow-Helsinki relations. Meanwhile, the Kremlin has warned that it will take adequate precautionary measures if NATO deploys nuclear forces and infrastructure closer to Russia's border, gave assurances that Moscow has no hostile intentions toward Finland and Sweden. Helsinki is expected to announce its NATO membership bid on Sunday, and Sweden will likely follow suit. Johnny Miller is a correspondent joining us from Donbass to give us the latest, and Fred Weir is a journalist and political commentator joining us from Moscow for an analytical breakdown on this. So, Johnny Miller, at this point, given the fact that you are where you are at, tell us more about what you're seeing there and how things are looking in terms of the way that this war is going, and in particular in that area. What's happening there?
Well, there's been almost constant rumbling outgoing artillery from the outskirts of Donetsk. The major bulk of the Ukrainian army is situated in Donbass, and the current objective of the Russian military is to neutralize that bulk of the Ukrainian army. They're trying to effectively envelop that part of the army and so to take the rest of the Donbass and Luhansk. Ukraine is currently celebrating what it thinks is a victory of the Battle of Kharkiv, in which Russian soldiers have retreated, and it's unclear whether that's a strategic withdrawal from Russia or if it is indeed a victory for the Ukrainian army.
Fred Weir, one of the things that is making the news now, which we just covered, is the fact that you have Finland wanting to join NATO, including Sweden. And, of course, Russia says that that's unfortunate that they are doing that. But they are saying that Russia is posing a threat. Russia says it's not. Does Russia pose a threat to either?
I don't think so. But the geopolitics in play right now are getting quite intense. And you can understand, I think, the Finnish attitude. It has changed a lot as attitudes in the West and in Europe have changed toward Russia. It's sympathy for Ukraine and a failure, I guess, to see the Russian point of view, which your other guest was expressing, that the Russians say they are fighting for Donbass. Everyone else in the West particularly says they're invading Ukraine and infringing on its sovereignty. So this is an irreversible situation. I don't know to what extent the situation in Europe will actually change. I do not believe that Russia has designs on any NATO members of Europe, but Finland will add another 1,000-kilometer confrontation line between NATO and Russia, and things will heat up inevitably. It's just all really, really bad.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We'll leave it there. Let me thank Johnny Miller, a correspondent from Donbass, reporting from Donbass, and Fred Weir, thank you, journalist and political commentator from Moscow. And with that, we come to an end for this news review. In Northern Ireland, a member of the Nationalist Party, Sinn Féin, says that the country is walking an irreversible journey towards reunification with the Republic of Ireland and independence from Britain.
I think there is an irreversible journey towards a united Ireland and the end of partition. Sinn Féin is at the very front of that movement to bring about an end of partition. The election results showed that Sinn Féin is the single biggest party in the north. Opinion polls over the last couple of years have shown that Sinn Féin is the biggest party in the south, and that there is a desire in the south in particular for the reunification of the country. What we want to happen is for the Dublin government to set up a citizens' assembly that can discuss all the issues around unification.
Pat Sheehan, who won a seat for Sinn Féin in the Western Belfast region, told Press TV that their victory was significant, as Republicans and other non-unionist parties were never expected to get top political jobs in the country. Sinn Féin secured 30% of the seats in the 90-seat legislature, ending a chain of victories for the pro-UK unionist parties. Those parties have been the largest in government since Northern Ireland was formed in 1921. Sheehan says their victory has its roots partly in the economy, as people are concerned over a cost of living crisis, with prices for fuel, food, and housing rising fast. He believes that most of these economic problems are connected to the Brexit referendum, which led to Britain getting out of the European Union. He says that Sinn Féin will plan for reunification with the European Union, and he has no doubt that this will happen.
But I think it will happen relatively soon. No one was predicting a year before the fall of apartheid that it was going to happen. Nobody was predicting the fall of the Berlin Wall a year before it happened. So people may think we're moving slowly, but at some stage that progress is going to accelerate, and I've no doubt we will see a united Ireland here.
He predicts that a referendum will take place this decade. Sheehan says they don't prefer a referendum similar to what happened in Brexit, where people did not know what they were voting for. They want all the facts on the table before a referendum takes place. The recent local polls in the UK also showed the ruling Conservative Party losing big in England. Pro-independence sentiments also remain strong in Scotland, where the Scottish National Party again finished as the biggest winner in council elections.
And that is it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Condemnations have been pouring in from different quarters on the cold-blooded murder of the Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh by Israeli regime forces in the occupied West Bank on Wednesday, 11th of May. We now present you an article written by Sayed Zafar Mahdi, a Tehran-based journalist, editor, political commentator and author. The piece is titled Shirin Abu Akleh's Gory Murder by Israel and Western Media's Skullduggery. A veteran Palestinian journalist, Shirin Abu Akleh, was murdered in cold blood early on Wednesday, 11th of May, while covering an Israeli military raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. To get this straight, without beating around the bush and without resorting to distortion of facts. Abu Aguilera wasn't killed. She was murdered. She was shot in the face despite sporting a vest with "press" written in capital letters on it. It was a premeditated murder. It certainly was not a case of mistaken identity either. One can clearly tell the difference between an unarmed journalist and an armed fighter, between a camera and a Kalashnikov. Abu Aguilera was not carrying arms or explosives that would potentially unnerve her killers. She was busy doing her job, which was to report the truth and unmask the tyrants, usurpers and aggressors. The longtime Al Jazeera Arabic journalist, who shot to fame while covering the second intifada between 2000 and 2005, was along with a group of local journalists reporting on an Israeli raid when the trigger-happy raiders went berserk. They clearly knew their target. It was a cowardly murder, a dastardly crime, an abhorrent abuse of power. It won't be an exaggeration to say that the 51-year-old Palestinian reporter was mowed down for exposing the apartheid regime's horrendous crimes in the occupied territories for the past 25 years. She had been rightly hailed as the voice of Palestinians in their long-standing struggle for the liberation of their occupied homeland and the freedom of their loved ones languishing in the dark dungeons of the Israeli regime. Quite brazenly but unsurprisingly, the Western military-industrial media complex can't see this broad daylight transgression the way it is. They are busy putting a spin on it to absolve the child-murdering regime in Tel Aviv of its horrendous crimes despite growing outrage across the world. The New York Times, which claims to be a champion of free speech in an obnoxious editorial decision, tried hard to trivialize the magnitude of the tragedy. The newspaper headline on Wednesday, 11th of May, beamed, "Shirin Abu Aguilera, Palestinian journalist, dies, age 51. As if the slain journalist had passed away peacefully in her sleep, as if no one murdered her in cold blood, as if nothing had happened. The Associated Press said the Palestinian journalist was killed by gunfire, without specifying the origin of the fire. The headline seemed to suggest that it was a stray bullet that smashed Abu Aguilera's face while she was accidentally trapped in the crossfire. Nothing can be further from the truth. Western media, through these misleading headlines and distorted reportage, have once again exhibited its hard-to-miss pro-Israel tilt, as if competing for the attention of murder masterminds in Tel Aviv. In an attempt to give a clean sheet to killers, big media flashed headlines such as "Abu Aguilera was killed during Israeli raid in the West Bank," the BBC, "Killed while reporting on an Israeli raid," NPT, "Killed while covering an Israeli military operation," CNN. No one said who killed her and why. The problem here is when reporting on Israeli war crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories, Western media simply assumes that balance means giving equal weight to both sides, without realizing one is an oppressor and the other is the oppressed. There can be no match. These headlines are classic examples of media misrepresentation, obfuscation, spin doctoring, and bizarre distortion of facts to fit a particular narrative. In this case, the narrative peddled by the Zionist regime and their apologists. Far from accepting responsibility, they have been hell-bent on pushing the blame on poor, hapless victims. The British newspaper The Guardian said Israel has been accused of murdering the Al Jazeera journalist while parroting the regime's baseless claims that the journalist may have been hit by Palestinian fire. Some, like the right-leaning Fox News channel, went a step further, saying the Al Jazeera journalist died following disputed incident in the occupied West Bank, not too different from the version pushed by the New York Times. There was no dispute, no clashes, and no one actually died. It was a brutal, diabolic murder of a Palestinian journalist by the Israeli military. Abu Aghila's murder is not an isolated case, though. According to the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate, PSJ, a body formed by journalists based in the city of Al-Quds, at least 46 journalists have been murdered since 2000 by the occupying forces, and absolutely no one has been held to account. Reporters Without Borders say at least 144 Palestinian journalists have been wounded by Israeli forces in the occupied Gaza Strip, in the occupied West Bank and the city of Al-Quds since 2018. Never has the Western media acknowledged Israel's war crimes in the occupied territories, let alone condemn them, even when journalists have been at the receiving end of the violence. On the contrary, it has sought to portray Palestinians as aggressors, misreporting Israel's naked aggression in Gaza as clashes or flare-ups of violence. The lives of Palestinians don't matter at all to Western journalists, including Palestinian journalists who brave enormous risks to report the truth. When Israeli airstrikes destroyed a media tower in the besieged Gaza Strip in May of 2021, there was a deafening silence from Western media outlets. In April of 2022, the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate, PJS, and other media bodies filed a formal complaint with the International Criminal Court, the ICC, against Israel's systematic targeting of journalists. Interestingly, the blatant double standards on the Palestinian issue are also exemplified by style guides used in big Western media organizations, which essentially prohibit the use of the word Palestine. For example, the 55th edition of the Associated Press style book, which is used widely in the West, states that words such as Palestine and Palestinians should be used in the context of Palestine's activities in international bodies to which it has been admitted. But words such as Palestine or State of Palestine not be used in other situations, since it is not a fully independent, unified state. This deliberate attempt by editors to apply style guide rules for neutral coverage without considering nuances of the issue is an utter disservice to both journalism and media practitioners in Palestine. It's time to call out the blatant hypocrisy of Western media, because Shirin Abu Aghila isn't the first one and most probably won't be the last one. Meanwhile, condemnations have been pouring in from different quarters on the cold-blooded murder of a Palestinian journalist by the Israeli regime forces in the occupied West Bank on Wednesday. The Islamic Republic of Iran, together with the resistance groups from Palestine and Lebanon, strongly condemned the murder of the Al Jazeera journalist, calling it a crime and an attack targeting the truth. Iran's Foreign Ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh denounced the fatal attack and commiserated with her family, the Qatar-based channel, and journalists committed to the Palestinian cause. Khatibzadeh said, "The criminal act is clear proof of the Zionist regime's utter disregard for the role of the press, the role of the media and journalists, and the position they hold to inform public opinion." The Lebanese Islamic resistance movement Hezbollah also strongly condemned Abu Aghila's assassination, stressing that the Israeli regime was trying to muzzle the voice of journalists to cover his crimes. It urged media organizations, the United Nations and human rights groups to denounce the Israeli regime in international forums and prevent the regime's acts of aggression against Palestinian journalists. Hazem Qasem, a spokesman for the Gaza-based Palestinian Hamas resistance movement, said Shirin Abu Aghila's assassination added to Israel's long list of crimes, especially against Palestinian journalists. Anthony Bellinger, The secretary of the International Federation of Journalists termed Abu Aguila's killing as a deliberate systematic targeting of a journalist. Anthony Bellinger said in a statement, yet again journalists wearing press vests clearly identified but targeted by Israeli snipers. We will seek to add this case to the International Criminal Court complaint submitted by the IFJ detailing such systematic targeting. The Palestinian Journalist Syndicate also denounced Abu Aguila's martyrdom as a clear assassination perpetrated by the Israeli occupation army. The Palestinian Journalist Syndicate held the Israeli occupation forces fully responsible for this heinous crime against press freedom, particularly after World Press Freedom Day, marked on 8th of May.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri wa salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of RIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagar.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
If we strive to be muttaqin and mu'mineen, we should know that the end of al-aqibatu lil-muttaqin, the end for the muttaqin is great. The ending for the muttaqin is pleasant. Entirely, in ways that are not imaginable for us right now. Okay, that being one thing, it needs to be emphasized, we need to understand. Now, once we've understood that, the Quran is very clear, and it's important for us to understand death and barzakh and the day of judgment in that way, and to realize that as a muttaqi, you look forward to it. We should look forward to it as a muttaqi. While that is the case, as we read in Surah Al-Ma'arij, those were verses from Surah Al-Ma'arij, it's very interesting how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala begins with, إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ خُلِقَ هَلُوعًا إِذَا مَسَّهُ الشَّرُّ جَزُوعًا وَإِذَا مَسَّهُ الْخَيْرُ مَنُوعًا. A person is created in this way, people or insan is created in a way where إِذَا مَسَّهُ other people, because then it says إِلَّا الْمُصَلِّينَ. Unless you are a musalli, the way you're created, you will be such. What? إِذَا مَسَّهُ شَرُّ جَزُوعًا. When shar, anything that's not pleasant, not good, anything like that comes to a person, جَزُوعًا, start complaining, start getting all worked up, start getting all angry, not unpleasant, and saying things to people, saying things about the condition. Jaza is to, I guess the best word that I can right now think of closest to it is complaining. It's not the exact equivalent of the word jaza. It's, you know, a person who's in pain, there are people that can be patient with it, and there's people that just aren't patient. They shout, they do things, they express, they allow that anger or that hardship to reveal in whatever way. That's jaza. Okay. وَإِذَا شَرْ مَسَّهُ الْخَيْرُ مَنُوعًا. But then when khayr comes their way, good comes their way, money comes their way, a good job comes their way, a good house comes their way, manu'a. They keep everybody out. Oh, this is just for me. This is how a human being is, the way human beings are created. There will be such unless, إِلَّا الْمُصَلِّينَ, unless you're a musalli. If you choose the path of salah, which has been described, a person becomes a musalli, then they're not like this. But if you don't go down that path of salah and being a musalli, then The way you're created, you're going to be إذا مسه الشر جزوع وإذا مسه الخير منوع. That's exactly what we see. This culture, anywhere in the world, anywhere, even if it's called a Muslim country, the person is not a musalli, although they call themselves Muslim, you'll see them doing the same thing. When there's hardship, there's war for Islam, they're like always complaining about everything. And then as soon as something good comes their way, they're all protective of it, keep everybody out. Opportunities, steal those opportunities, keep them for themselves, not let anybody else have, and keep growing and growing, come to be these big capitalists, even though they're called Muslim, they're capitalists, not in the, in the very particular sense of the word. Anyone who's a materialist is a capitalist. Okay. That's how. Then the interesting thing here is it starts with salah. Illa al-musallin. Doesn't say illa al-muttaqin. The amud we have in hadith, it's those hadith conform with this. The amud of deen, what holds the deen up, what causes or has a person as a muttaqi, as a mu'min, all those good traits, the pillar of it, the central pivotal point is salah, illa al-musallin. Then God describes who these musallin are. It's not just performing that prayer in its superficial form. Okay. A musalli is someone who is ala salatihim da'imun. For another time, we've discussed it before. They're constant, or they're always in prayer. Alladhina fi amwalihim, charity, they in their belongings, they consider there to be a right that belongs to, part of what I have belongs to, and I have to give to, lissa'ili wal mahrum, the person who is asking for assistance, and the person who is deprived even if they're not asking. وَالَّذِينَ يُصَدِّقُونَ بِيَوْمِ الدِّينِ. This is the part that I wanted to discuss tonight a little bit. Musallin are people that يُصَدِّقُونَ بِيَوْمِ الدِّينِ وَالَّذِينَ هُمْ مِنْ عَذَابِ رَبِّهِمْ مُشْفِقُونَ. And those who from, and in regards to the عذاب, the punishment of their Lord, they're fearful. Those du'as, those ahadith that describe that the negative part of qiyamah of death, those are reminders that it could be like that for us to be afraid of that. That's what the verse says. Muttaqin, their experience will be that it's all pleasant. However, when they're living their lives, do they think that, oh, I'm good, nothing's going to, it's all going to be good. Oh, well, give me the verses about huris and so on and so forth. I'm going to be having a great time and no issue whatsoever. And am I supposed to think that way? No, I'm supposed to be thinking. Those muttaqin think this way. وَالَّذِينَ هُمْ مِنَ First of all, وَالَّذِينَ يُصَدِّقُونَ بِيَوْمِ الدِّينِ They attest to, they confirm, they affirm the day of judgment, and they're afraid of the punishment of their Lord. They have fear of it. A muttaqi in his life, when they think of that, they read these verses about the day of judgment, that verse in Surah Al-Hajj, the dua of Imam Zain al-Abideen. They read these and they're afraid. They have that fear. That's part of their taqwa. That's part of what causes us to think twice about doing wrong. The punishments, the difficulties of death, read them. Read the other part as well. Look forward to that with hope, hoping that God will take us there. Recognizing that without God's help, I'm not going to make it there. And looking at the punishment and seeing that I deserve this. Seeing that if Imam Zain al-Abideen sees that because he says it, if he sees it and therefore says it, we should definitely see it. in ourselves and be afraid. Be afraid. That is part of taqwa. وَالَّذِينَ هُمْ مِنْ عَذَابِ رَبِّهِمْ مُشْفِقُونَ. The last point, so the central point that we wanted to cover in this weekly reminder was that while adhab is not for everyone, death onwards, it's not a gloomy, dark, ugly, painful picture for everyone at the moment of death onwards, for muttaqin is actually great, better. Everything becomes better and all the bad and all the shar is gone the moment of death onwards. While that's the case, a muttaqi needs to remember the adab of Allah and to be afraid of it.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareem Adi Alim Halim Hakim Mateen Ghafur Shakur Wadud Qayyim وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
The 1.5 degree Celsius figure is not some random statistic, said the head of the World Meteorological Organization, adding, it is rather an indicator of the point at which climate impacts will become increasingly harmful for people and indeed the entire planet. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Earth Now Has 50% Chance of Hitting 1.5 Degrees Celsius of Warming by 2026. Stay tuned for more. The World Meteorological Organization warned recently that the planet now faces a 50% chance of temporarily hitting 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming above pre-industrial levels over the next 5 years. Another signal that political leaders, particularly those of the rich nations most responsible for carbon emissions, are failing to rein in fossil fuel use. In 2015, by comparison, the likelihood of briefly reaching or exceeding 1.5 degrees Celsius of global warming over the ensuing five-year period was estimated to be close to zero, the WMO noted in a new climate update. The report was published amid a deadly heat wave on the Indian subcontinent that scientists say is a glimpse of what's to come if runaway carbon emissions aren't halted. Thus far, the heat wave has killed dozens in India and Pakistan. Signatories to the Paris Climate Accord have agreed to act to limit the global average temperature increase to well below 2 degrees Celsius, preferably to 1.5 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. Climate advocates have deemed the 1.5 degrees Celsius target on life support, following world leaders' refusal to commit to more ambitious action at COP26 summit in Glasgow late last year. Petteri Talas, the Secretary General of the WMO, said in a statement recently, "We are getting measurably closer to temporarily reaching the lower target of the Paris Agreement. The 1.5 degrees Celsius figure is not some random statistic. It is rather an indicator of the point at which climate impacts will become increasingly harmful for people and indeed the entire planet." Talas added, "For as long as we continue to emit greenhouse gases, temperature will continue to rise. And alongside that, our oceans will continue to become warmer and more acidic. Sea ice and glaciers will continue to melt. Sea level will continue to rise and our weather will become more extreme. Arctic warming is disproportionately high and what happens in the Arctic affects us all." Dr. Leon Hermansen, a climate expert in the UK Met Office who led the WMO report, stressed that a short-lived breach of the 1.5 degree Celsius threshold would not mean that the world is guaranteed to fall short of the Paris Accord's most ambitious warming target, which climate experts and campaigners have long decried as inadequate. Such a breach, however, would reveal that we are edging ever closer to a situation where 1.5 degrees Celsius could be exceeded for an extended period, said Hermansen. The WMO's latest research also estimates that there is a 93% chance that at least 1 year between 2022 and 2026 will be the warmest on record. Currently, 2016 and 2020 are tied for the top spot. Even if global warming is limited to 1.5 degrees Celsius by 2100, countless people across the globe will still face devastating heat waves, droughts, and other extreme weather, with the poor facing the worst consequences. Meanwhile, key ecosystems could be damaged beyond repair in a 1.5 degrees Celsius hotter world. One recent study found that 99% of the world's coral reefs would experience heat waves that are too frequent for them to recover if the planet gets 1.5 degrees Celsius warmer compared to the pre-industrial levels. Scientists behind the latest Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, report cautioned last month that if there is to be any hope of keeping warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius or below by 2100, it's now or never. Without immediate and deep emissions reductions across all sectors, it will be impossible, said Jim Ski, co-chair of IPCC Working Group 3rd.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. It should not be the case that we are popular in the beginning, but later on become tired. No, you should really remain popular. I do not mean that you should definitely continue these provincial trips until the end of your term. They might stop at some point, and this is all right. Popularity is not confined to provincial trips. Being in contact with the people and hearing from them are also manifestations of popularity. Sometimes one hears from ordinary people points that one does not hear from veteran and experienced experts, and one benefits from their viewpoints more. Being in contact with the people and popular reports have this advantage. Another point which I would like to place great emphasis on is the policies on Article 44 of the Constitution, which were announced a few years ago and which everyone spoke highly of, but they have not been acted on. Different administrations have been reminded of this, and they each said that they intended to act on it. But the policies on Article 44 have not been acted on in the true sense of the word. The economy of the country must be truly in the hands of the people, and the administration should only play its supervisory role without playing an executive role. This is very important.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Sometimes you put a load on your own shoulder and decide to carry it from a city to another. And sometimes you put it inside a fast vehicle and you drive it. The second one is correct. The fast and active vehicle is the entrepreneur of the country. We must activate these, but you should supervise their work, formulate policies, and take care not to let a mistake be made. However, you must let them work. Both the entrepreneur, the people, and you, as government officials, will benefit from this. This is one issue. Another issue which is very important and which is a long-term project is the issue of economic growth without oil. Just like the countries which do not have any oil and which have a good rate of economic growth and progress, and they are not small in number either, this addictive drug, that is oil, has made us addicted since 100 years ago. It is really a difficult form of addiction.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.